We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Oh, well then, this is one way to wake up on a Sunday morning. Good morning. Chris Mack of the Fan Morning Show with you here on a Sunday morning. This is usually when our friend Josh Taylor would be grinding, no? Yes. Matty Ice, a.k.a. Matt Harkins, producing back in Green Tree. And you've noticed, if you've listened at all this weekend to 93.7 The Fan, a little bit of a difference in the schedule, right? Like, we usually have a ton of guys who fill in all these weekend hours and part-time gaps where we need them to be filled. It's not happening. You heard Mulsey on yesterday. You heard Pony on yesterday. Today it'll be me, and then Dan Zangrilli will have another show today like he did yesterday morning with Bucko Talk, and then Colin will be on later, and I believe both Ron and Joe, Cook and Starkey, will both be on later. So we're doing everything we can or everything possible to limit contact, right? To limit the number of people coming into our building, our Entercom Pittsburgh headquarters in Green Tree. So, unfortunately, all the usual weekend voices that you're used to hearing, Josh Taylor, Doran Dickerson, Kevin Gorman, B-win-win-win, Paul Alexander, Tab Douglas, Craig Riley, even though he's still doing a great job producing the afternoon show, the PM team, all these people who usually you hear their voices on the weekends, you're not getting to hear them. So that's why you're hearing, like I said, me right now. I'll be on with you until 9 a.m. this morning here on 93.7 The Fan. You can follow us on Twitter at 93.7 The Fan. Driven by Jim Shorkey Kia, Pittsburgh's number one Kia dealer. Shop all three locations at ShorkeyKia.com. I'll be here until 9. Like I said, Dan Zangrilli takes over for a couple hours after that. Colin Dunlap on from 11 to 1. And then throughout the day, those of us who are on 5 days a week will do everything we can working from home to keep things rolling along, keep things moving forward, because, we don't stop. We got to change plans a little bit. That's, unfortunately, the way things go in a COVID-19 world, right? Coronavirus be damned. We will continue to talk to you, and we will continue to talk sports, as well as anything that has to do with those sports. You can chime in. The text line, still open. You can call 412-928-9370. The Edgar Snyder and Associates fan text line, still open. 412-928-9370. Edgar Snyder and Associates reminding you to text responsibly. As a part of trying to keep those voices involved who you don't normally hear Monday through Friday, but you get to hear on the weekends, I'm going to have a few of my friends on later today. Kevin Gorman will join at 7:40. We'll get him on the phone. We'll have Josh Taylor again, who so often hosts Sunday mornings, the Sunday morning grind with you. We'll have him on at 8 o'clock. And Doran Dickerson joins me at 8:20, 8:25-ish. Plenty to talk about with each of these guys, as well as to just check in on them and see how they are doing with everybody being told to more or less, I don't know if it's shelter in place, if it's just stay home for all non-essential issues. If you got to go to the grocery store, absolutely. You got to keep up with the essentials. If you have to get food and support your local small businesses with takeout order, by all means, we understand that. But other than that, hang out at home, just like we are doing. We'll check in with those guys throughout the show this morning. But plenty of other stuff to talk about. Like, the sports world, this is the one thing that I keep getting from people. And, you know, we'll be hanging out in the driveway watching the kids play or ride their bikes or, you know, and people go walking by, taking their dogs for a walk, doing the same thing with their kids, going for a walk, watching them ride their bikes, whatever it is. Everybody keeps chiming in with this same thought, from a safe social distance, mind you, but chiming in with the same thought. What are you guys talking about? There's no sports to talk about. What could you possibly be talking about? Oh, there's plenty to talk about, friends, and we'll go through some of it this morning from the world of college sports, from the world of the NFL, from the world of baseball, which is actually where we start this morning. Bob Nightingale of USA Today writing a column yesterday after talking with Union Chief Tony Clark about yet another idea, and not vastly different from some of the other proposals we've heard, but another idea for how to get a season in this summer, and maybe more accurately, this fall, as far as Major League Baseball is concerned. How do we get it in? Well, the Players Association, the players and the owners, came to an agreement. We talked about this on the Fan Morning Show on Friday. The agreement is in place as to the changes that will be made this year. A much shorter amateur draft, which we can get into the effects. Jason Mackey wrote about it yesterday in the Post-Gazette. We can get into the effects of that on the Pirates specifically, because the effects will be felt much more, it seems, at least at first initial assessment, by the smaller market teams. But we'll get into that in a couple of minutes. These proposals, these plans, and this agreement, this one firm agreement that baseball and the players have come to, that they're willing to waive a lot of what would be your usual restrictions. Usually you're not allowed to play more than 20 consecutive days. It sounds like, according to Tony Clark and the players, at least those that we've heard from, they're willing to play at least 21 consecutive days. They're willing to waive some of the usual travel restrictions once everyone is allowed to travel again, where typically you've got to have so much time between leaving one city or finishing one game and starting another game in another city the next day. In return, rosters are expected to be expanded beyond what was going to be. This was going to be the first year of 26 players on a roster rather than 25 at the major league level. Sounds like that will be expanded as well, perhaps 29 players in the first couple of months of the season. And the players, according to Tony Clark in this Bob Nightingale column in USA Today, the players are open to having a discussion just about everything, Clark said. Right now, no door is closed. Obviously, the calendar is going to dictate a lot. Yes, we know that. The calendar and when we're all allowed to be, well, out and about, I guess, for lack of a better way to put it, when people are going to be allowed to travel again, especially in places like New York, for example, where the coronavirus has hit harder than anywhere else in the United States. Other places like Seattle, like Detroit, like, well, it doesn't impact Major League Baseball, at least not Major League teams there, but Louisiana. Places like that where the outbreak, where there have been quote-unquote hot spots. You've got to consider how that plays into people traveling and playing baseball, whether it's in empty stadiums or not, because that's something that players have agreed to as well. Hey, if we got to play in empty stadiums, we'll play in empty stadiums, we'll play at neutral sites, we'll do whatever we have to do, the players have said, to get these games in. Again, Tony Clark telling Bob Nightingale in USA Today yesterday, we would play as long as we possibly could. Obviously, said Clark, the weather becomes a challenge the later you get in the calendar year, but we would do our best to play as many as possible games, he's talking about, regardless of when we start. How many games remains to be seen, but Bob Nightingale writes after this conversation with Tony Clark of the Players Association, the players are poised to play their World Series as late as Thanksgiving Day. Again, last week we had talked about this proposal that Agent Scott Boras put forth, where games would be played at neutral sites and in warm weather cities in the month of November, and then maybe playoffs in December. And it sounds like it's going to have to be, if the season is really cut back to as few as 80 games or maybe less, who knows, that they'll want a modified playoff proposal as well, as many as 14 teams in the playoffs out of the 30 in the major leagues. So now you're talking about maybe not December for playoffs. That's getting a little radical. And Scott Boras, again, had proposed maybe a World Series that wraps up around Christmas time. But this, at least according to Tony Clark, speaking to Bob Nightingale of USA Today, is more of a let's get as many regular season games in as we can, as rapidly as we have to do it. And that may mean, you know, in all honesty, this may mean now, if we sit down and think about it, you could get in, I'm guessing you could get in 80 games in, let's see, 3 months? You could get in 80 games in 3 months, and would it require some maneuvering and machinations and waiving of some of those travel restrictions and 21 games in 21 days, those kind of things? Yeah, I guess you could get it done. And if you did so, if you had to wait until August, if you had to wait all the way until August to start the season, because, again, we're talking about a three-week or so ramp-up, a resumption of spring training, if you want to call it that, for Major League Baseball to get going again, then if players aren't allowed to get back into groups and into facilities and we're not allowed to travel, and therefore they're not allowed to travel until late June, early July, you could still get in an abridged Major League season in August, September, and October and get in some sort of modified playoff system in the month of November. And it sounds like baseball is willing to do that. They're willing to do whatever it takes to get baseball in. One thing, and we talked about this a ton, it's Chris Mack, by the way, the Fan Morning Show with you here on a Sunday morning. You're not used to hearing me here. You're used to, well, there's a cast of weekend characters that we have here on 93.7 The Fan, most of whom I think I'm pretty close with, and most of you are used to hearing usually Josh Taylor in this spot on Sunday mornings as he grinds away every Sunday morning. Unfortunately, our part-timers, as I mentioned off the top of the show, not allowed in the building. They want to limit the number of people in the building, and not all of them have the technology at home to do what those of us who are working Monday through Friday are doing. So those of us who work Monday through Friday are holding it down on the weekends as well here. I'll be with you until 9 o'clock this morning. One of the things we had talked about before all of this, before the pandemic really started to hit, was the idea of what's it going to be like for the Astros in particular. Are we going to be talking about beanball-o-rama every single time they walk out onto a field this year? Will the start of every series, especially against division rivals, be met with the first couple of guys in the Astros lineup either having been thrown at or actually hit purposely? And how much will Dusty Baker and the Astros push back against that? How much will Major League Baseball try to protect that from happening? And just how much bad blood is still at play here between the Astros and other teams? And the one thing we've repeatedly said, and I would think most people feel the same way, is you would hope the Astros would do a better job than they have over the last few months, Alex Bregman, Carlos Correa, their owner Jim Crane, of conveying some sense of some sense of, hey, you know what? We were in the wrong. We'll shut up and take our medicine, right? Instead, they've done nothing but the opposite, right? They've almost been more aggressive in saying, hey, well, you know, it is what it is, and we still won that World Series, you know, and it had nothing to do. We all know it had something to do with it. When the owner sits up there and says, well, I don't think it impacted the games, you can't take that seriously. But the Astros have continued to push back, right? It's made it very hard to stomach the way they've responded to all of this. Well, Evan Gattis is not letting a pandemic stand between he and that continued tone-deaf response from guys who were members of the 2017 Astros. Evan Gattis tweeting, what was it yesterday, I guess? Was it yesterday or the day before? Days just bleed into other days. At this point, it would have been Friday night, he tweeted a picture of a glass, like a drinking glass, with Mike Fiers' face on it. Mike Fiers, the guy who was the whistleblower in the Astros cheating scandal and now plays for the Oakland A's. A picture of Mike Fiers' face in his A's cap, and underneath it, it says, "Snitches get stitches." And that's all Gattis tweeted, was just a picture of the glass. Well, naturally, that led to a firestorm. And Gattis had to walk it back just a little bit, because when you're completely and totally tone-deaf to the fact that you cheated your way to a World Series title and you were one of the ringleaders, there's a good chance if you were clueless enough to go through with that scheme, thinking that you would not get caught at some point, you're also clueless enough to not understand that you probably shouldn't tweet out that photo of Mike Fiers with "snitches get stitches" underneath it. So you walked it back a few hours later and said, "For the record, I have zero bad feelings toward Fiers. We've actually texted, and I hoped he didn't get too much hate. He was our teammate. I just thought the glass was funny." No, it's part of you, Evan Gattis, as well as Alex Bregman, as well as Carlos Correa, as well as Jose Altuve, as well as Jim Crane, the owner of your team, as well as everybody else who was involved in the Astros garbage can banging cheating scandal. It's part of your continued tone-deaf response, your complete and utter lack of awareness that you were the ones in the wrong, and you continue to be fed the ability to do just that, to respond in a tone-deaf manner by everybody who rolls forward with this, "Well, Mike Fiers is a snitch, and he, you know what, he gets what he deserves." I'd love to know if he's given up his World Series shares yet, or what has he done with his... I don't care what Mike Fiers has done with any of his World Series stuff. I don't care if Mike Fiers has turned his World Series rings into earrings, or if he's got it put on a necklace that he wears around and he walks around shirtless so everyone can see it dangle over his taco meat chest. I don't care. I don't know. For the record, I don't know if Mike Fiers has chest hair or not. I'm really not curious in that either. But my point is this: I don't care. I don't care. What I care about is that the Astros cheated and that they continue to walk around with their chests puffed out as if to say, "Yeah, so what? We're still the World Series champs. What are you going to do about it? Snitches get stitches." Come on. Come on, Tony Soprano. You're not in the mob, okay? Snitches don't get stitches in this case. What snitches got were, they got us the truth. They got us the truth as to how you guys cheated everybody in 2017. And you know what? Maybe there were other teams that were a part of it. Maybe there were. And maybe we won't ever get the whole, complete, total truth about what other teams were involved and how they were involved and what schemes were going on. But what we did get is at least a sliver of it. And that sliver of truth that we got was, you, the Houston Astros, were cheating. So, shut your mouths. And stop complaining about it. And stop telling us how snitches get stitches. You're not in the mob. This is baseball. It's not the mafia. And Evan Gattis and Alex Bregman and Carlos Correa and Jose Altuve and anybody else that was on that team needs to stop and let that sink in for just a second. A little humility may be key here in that you were caught cheating, and that's what you have to do is you have to shut your mouth and deal with the repercussions. You don't get to dictate how you're viewed by everyone else at this point. All right, Doran Dickerson going to join me in the 8 o'clock hour, as well as Josh Taylor, who usually hosts in this time slot. Kevin Gorman joins me in about 20, 25 minutes here. I'm Chris Mack of the Fan Morning Show, taking you through a Sunday morning because, well, hey, we've all got to do what we have to do in this weird world where we're socially distanced and people can't go into work, and so our weekend staff can't get into the building, and those of us who are full-timers working Monday through Friday and have had our houses wired to do this thing remotely, we'll hold it down for you. 93.7 The Fan, all of us doing our part to help Pittsburgh stay connected. Go to our radio.com app. Get ideas to help you during this stay-at-home time. Again, radio.com/stay connected for all the latest news on the coronavirus pandemic. There's our sister station, News Radio 1020 KDKA. You can find KDKA Radio on the app, radio.com, at AM 1020, obviously, on HD2, 93.7 HD2, or just tell your smart speaker to play News Radio 1020 KDKA. An update here a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. And we talk about the versatility of Derek Watt. Mark Caboli wrote about it in The Athletic this weekend. We talked about it in the immediate aftermath of the signing. But some ideas about how he can be deployed on offense, not just on special teams. And the Ravens continue to do one thing that seemingly every team who falls short of their expectations in the NFL postseason does the following offseason. I explain that to you next here on 93.7 The Fan. It's Chris Mack, The Fan Morning Show, with you here on a Sunday morning, grinding with you. I feel like I'm almost like poaching Josh's territory if I mention grinding on a Sunday morning. That's his thing. But Josh Taylor will check in at the top of the hour at 8 o'clock. I'll have him on the phone. Doran Dickerson in the 8 o'clock hour as well. And Kevin Gorman at 7:40. Some of the usual voices you hear on the weekends here at 93.7 The Fan. And again, for those that are just waking up, just checking in, I don't know, maybe you're working on this Sunday morning and you're one of the people who's on the front lines. I don't know, maybe you're a healthcare worker, just trying to tune in for a little bit of a distraction and you're used to hearing Josh in this time slot, or you've been driving around this weekend, I don't know, maybe you had to go to the store, or maybe you had a takeout order you had to pick up. I don't know what it may be, but you've been hearing those of us who work Monday through Friday on the weekend, and you're like, what's going on at the Fan? Well, our weekenders, our company has decided to just limit the number of people coming into the building. It makes a ton of sense, given everything going on. So the weekenders can't get into the building. There's not enough technological impact, or not enough technology, I guess I should say, to outfit every single one of the part-timers' homes with all the same equipment that we as full-timers have in our homes right now, wired to help us broadcast from home. So those of us who are full-timers and have that equipment, we'll carry things through on the weekends for the time being. I've decided to have some of those same weekenders who I am friends with on the air with me today, and we'll continue to do that as long as I have to carry these Sunday mornings along with you as well. I have no problem doing that, keeping you distracted, hopefully, by talking about what's going on in the world of sports and otherwise, and having the usual suspects check in as well. So, again, Kevin Gorman at 7:40, just about, let's see, a little less than 15 minutes from now. We'll talk to Doran Dickerson in the 8 o'clock hour as well as Josh Taylor. One of the things I want to talk to Doran about is Derek Watt. Supposed to be, let's put it this way, he has to be used in multiple ways if the Steelers are really truly going to get their money's worth out of this signing. And this has been talked about since the signing was made news, it's about a week ago now, just a little less than a week ago, as free agency started this past week in the NFL. And the way I look at it is this. He's essentially, you're cobbling together the Roosevelt Knicks and Tyler Matakavich roles, both of whom are gone, and you're asking Derek Watt to do both of those, asking him to be a fullback in the Rosie Nix role, as well as a special teamer in the Tyler Matakavich role. Not going to ask Derek Watt to play inside linebacker, and Matakavich didn't get on the field to do that all that often anyway. And really, the same goes for Nix at fullback, who was also a special teamer and didn't get on the field in the fullback role very much as well. But Mark Caboli wrote about it in The Athletic this weekend, and it's something I had mentioned right off the hop when we found out that Derek Watt had been signed, and I think it's something to keep an eye on. Is a team that has struggled with tight end depth so much the last couple of years, and obviously went out and signed Eric Ebron because of that, to back up Vance McDonald and maybe even be a 1B to Vance McDonald's 1A when McDonald becomes limited due to injuries, because we've seen that over the last couple of years. Beyond that, what do they have in that tight end role, right? Zach Gentry, who they drafted last year, didn't really progress the way they wanted him to in his first year. And beyond that, what? That's it. Okay, so what do they do with the tight end spot if they ever want to get a third tight end onto the field? We've seen, yes, number 72 report is eligible, Zach Banner, and he may be a part of the solution at right tackle if Matt Filer is asked to move to left guard due to the retirement of Ramon Foster. So, with all that said, you needed more depth at tight end. The signing of Eric Ebron alone may not provide that. Can Derek Watt play tight end at all? And again, Caboli did a nice job of looking at some of the work that Derek Watt did with the Chargers over the last couple of years. And he is capable of lining up, maybe not as an inline tight end with his hand in the dirt, but certainly as sort of a wing tight end off the line of scrimmage and a two-point stance, and playing that role as a third tight end, really, as an H-back. You know, he talked about how Anthony Lynn, the Chargers head coach, made comparisons to Dallas Clark. Again, is Derek Watt going to be running down the seam like Rob Gronkowski, elevating up over safeties to make... No. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about very limited number of snaps as a tight end, or at least in a tight end position. We're talking about a very limited number of snaps as a fullback, because that's just the way the Steelers' offense has gone the last couple of years. Unless Matt Canada is bringing something drastically different to the table formation-wise that Randy Feuchner wants to install into the offense and that Ben Roethlisberger is comfortable with, we're not going to see this crazy number of snaps for Derek Watt on the offensive side of the ball, especially in a tight end position, let alone a fullback position. But it's interesting to note that that's something that he's open to. He mentioned that in his conference call when he was introduced to the media last week. But something that another head coach in Anthony Lynn, his former head coach, commented on in past times of need for the Chargers. When they were thin at tight end, they would use Derek Watt, again, not as a prototype tight end, but in that position in the formation. And that's where I start to wonder, is that... will that be enough for us to look at Derek Watt and say, hey, you know what, that signing was worth it. That was worth them restructuring some deals and moving some things around. And, yeah, Ebron was sort of the marquee name on the free agent market for the Steelers because they never go out and make a huge splash on the free agent market, especially in a year where they're very limited in cap space and had to rearrange some deck chairs just to make that cap space exist. But... is that what we need? What do you need to see from Derek Watt to feel like that signing was worth it? Will it be enough to just see him run down the field on kick coverage a few times every weekend, maybe come up with a big tackle here and there? If he forces a turnover at some point in time, you look at that as sort of icing on the cake. Will that be enough? Or do you have to see him involved in the offense to feel like you're getting the payoff for a guy who's maybe the highest-paid special teamer in the league this year, I think? If you look at guys who are special teams first, outside of kickers and punters, Derek Watt will be probably the highest-paid special teamer in the NFL. Is that enough, just the special teams work, for you to feel like that contract is worth it? Or do you have to see him make those contributions on the offensive side of the ball as a fullback, maybe catch the occasional pass out of the backfield, line up as a tight end in a goal line or short yardage situation? Again, not an inline tight end, but maybe in a little bit more of an H-back role, wing tight end, set off the line in a two-point stance. Will that be enough for you? Just seeing him on the field, again, maybe not catching the ball even. Maybe just, I don't know, making a little seal-off block on the outside, or turning somebody outside to create a little bit of an alley or a lane for a back to get through. Is that enough for you? Or do you need, or have you already placed outsized expectations on Derek Watt because nobody can get paid that much just to be a special teamer? And, oh, yeah, his last name's Watt, too, so he must be able to have some kind of a special impact on a game. I wonder what the expectations are going to be for him, both realistically and then those outsized expectations that will grow from people looking at him and seeing the name Watt on the back of his jersey, but also looking at him and saying, man, if we're going to pay that guy that much, nearly $10 million over the next few years, he better be able to provide something other than running down the field and tackling people on special teams. I'll be curious to see what those expectations are and how outsized they get, again, because of those extenuating circumstances like the size of the contract and the last name on the back of the jersey. I haven't had anything to eat yet this morning, and it hasn't affected me because I'm not typically a big breakfast eater. Chris Mack with you, Chris Mack of the Fan Morning Show with you on what is not the Fan Morning Show. It's a Sunday morning. I'll be with you until 9 o'clock this morning as we piece things together here on the schedule this weekend and for the next few weekends, I would think. I haven't had anything for breakfast, and I'm wondering, what cereal do I go with? I tweeted out a photo earlier of we've got this array of cereals in our pantry, and I'm curious. The immediate response from people has been, you got to go with the Frosted Flakes. But then over on the far right of the photo, there's Cinnamon Toast Crunch, too, Well, it's a generic Cinnamon Toast Crunch. It's the Aldi version, I guess, of Cinnamon Toast Crunch, just Cinnamon Crunch. But there's Cocoa Krispies in there. There's Rice Krispies in there. There's your standard Cheerios, which a few people have said, yeah, you got to go Cheerios. There's like a Honey Nut Frosted Flakes, which I'll be honest, I noticed the box is open. I haven't tried them yet, so I'm curious. There's just your standard Corn Flakes in there, too. So this is the point we're at in the pandemic quarantine where I'm now getting excited about what kind of cereal I'm going to have at 9 o'clock when I'm done with the show. Or do we make 8:40? Do we make 8:40, the last segment of the show, before I get off the air, kind of a mix it all together in a bowl and taste test it kind of segment? Do I have my cereal with you on the air at 8:40? That's another way we could go about it, but I don't know. It depends what you suggest I have. Again, at the Chris Mack on Twitter, you can go check it out. Frosted Flakes is hard to pass up, man, but Cinnamon Toast Crunch for the win, right? If I got to take my top three out of the ones that I put out there, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, then Frosted Flakes. It's hard to turn down the chocolatey milk that you get as the residue of Cocoa Krispies, though, and those are in the mix as well. I don't know. I'm not a big plain Cheerios fan, so that will not be it. I can guarantee you that. Honey Nut Cheerios, I'm down with. Plain Cheerios, sorry. It's not happening. All right, we'll check in with Doran Dickerson at 8:20. We'll talk to him about some of these thoughts about Derek Watt's versatility and expectations placed on him. It is a Sunday morning, so we'll grind for just a couple of minutes with Josh Taylor at 8 o'clock. Talk to him about, we're both huge baseball fans, so the idea of a World Series being wrapped up around Thanksgiving. Does that make sense? Does it make sense to talk about a possible schedule for any sport at this point in time? Or is that the duty of the commissioners and owners of these leagues to have as many contingency plans in place? And if they leak out and we talk about them, oh, well, so be it. But coming up next, my buddy Kevin Gorman. We talked to him about a number of different issues, including the NCAA revealed yesterday the shortage that's going to come to universities in revenue because of the lack of an NCAA tournament this year. Kevin has covered all of the local colleges at some point in his long career, and I'm just curious his thoughts on what the impact financially will be, not so much on the Power 5 conference teams, but these mid-majors and small schools, your Duquesnes, your Robert Morris's, and he's a friend of mine too, so I just want to check in with Gormy and see how things are going for him over in Baldwin. It is not the Fan Morning Show, but it is Chris Mack with you here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Live from my basement, how are you? I'm Chris Mack. It is not the Fan Morning Show. It's a Sunday morning. Speaking of which, Josh Taylor, usually grinding away in this time slot, will join me in 15 minutes. We'll talk to him about a number of different issues, and Doran Dickerson also checks in at just after 8:20. We'll talk about some football issues and just, well, you know, life in general in a coronavirus world, which brings me to my buddy Kevin Gorman. B-win-win-win for the win. Kevin Gorman joins me now on the Fan Hotline. Gorman, first of all, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for jumping on, man. Given everything that's happened over the last few weeks, I'm sure one of the last things you're worried about is getting on the air and being able to talk about sports, but I know how important it is to you too. So, and the same goes for Josh and Thorne and everybody else, everybody that works on the weekends here at the Fan. So I wanted to have an opportunity to talk to you guys, not just about sports, but about, I don't know, life in general. How are things going for you and your family so far, and how have you killed the time?
I've killed the time by doing some things I didn't expect to do, like filing for unemployment and, filing my taxes and things like that. But, I'm doing well, actually. I'm just trying to keep, my mom's in her mid 70s and she lives with me. And so she's been in quarantine since, March 13th. She's not been out of the house, because she has, compromised immune system with a lung disease. So we're just trying to keep her safe is my top priority. But other than that, I'm just trying to, going out for long walks and I'm getting thrown off golf courses. I found a beautiful place to go for a long walk all by myself, walking the cart path of a golf course. And then the second time that I did it, I was told I wasn't allowed to be on the golf course anymore. So I'll have to find new laws and rules to break.
Well, there's some really good hills in North Baldwin over your way. You burn 6,000 calories just walking up and down Joseph Street all day.
Yeah, and you know what? And I have. That's been one of the routes. I've taken several routes. In fact, one of the guys who lives in North Baldwin that I ran into on one of my early walks is Mike Logan, the former Steelers safety. So
yeah.
I had a chance to catch up with him one of the days. And so that was cool, you know, getting a chance to kind of reminisce with him. And I never fail to mention every time I see Mike, I never fail to mention that when he was in high school at McKeesport, he had two interceptions in the end zone to beat Baldwin in the WPL playoffs. And so that was against my brother's team back in 1991. So he loves me for that because I mentioned one of probably the most memorable moments of his high school career.
Was that a Gelsizer team as well, or was that pre-Gelsizer?
That was post-Gelsizer. That was the 1991 Baldwin team that was the first to make the WPL playoffs in school history. And my brother was a senior on that team. And, you know, that was a team that included guys like Mike Briscoe was the star running back. And then Damon Denton was, I think, a junior on that team. He went on to play in Michigan and for the New England Patriots. So it had a lot of talent on that team. And, you know, a lot of kids I grew up with, I was a couple years older than most of them. But probably the best, the most accomplished team in Baldwin football history.
Yeah, I mean, those were the heydays of Don Yanessa first coming over from Aliquippa and bringing that. I just remember the biggest thing to me, I only played 1 year of football at Baldwin, but the biggest thing to me was Donnie Y pulling into the parking lot in that caddy and walking down the ramp onto the field. And it felt like there was just this glow behind the guy that, because people at Baldwin, as you just mentioned, you know, it was the first playoff team in history in the early 90s. And throughout the 90s, I graduated in 98, it was like this aura around Donnie Y, and you just knew when he was around.
Well, I was there when he arrived. It was my junior year. And had he come a year earlier, I probably would have played football my sophomore year. Part of the reason I didn't was because when I was at Baldwin, they endured two consecutive winless seasons. And it was just a miserable time to be, you know, playing football. I played as a freshman, and it was just, you know, it was something people didn't want to be part of, was just
right.
Going out and watching the football team getting crushed. And he came in, and I think Don does not get the credit he deserves for turning that, not only that program, the football program around, but just instilling pride in the athletic program in general.
Yeah.
You know, he did a fantastic job, and I say that having witnessed it firsthand from within the school. And, you know, Baldwin had a lot of great athletic teams, individual, you know, like the girls volleyball team and the softball team were fantastic when I was there. But it became something across the entire athletic department. And he really got the community involved in terms of sponsorship, and he brought a lot of school pride. So I don't think he gets the credit he deserves just because he didn't win a WPL championship. He actually turned one of the worst football programs in the WPIL into one that was competitive against everybody.
Yeah, and got guys like Paul Hines involved, who was key to those volleyball and softball championships. Mr. Veith, who had so much to do with the athletic department as well. All right, too much inside Baldwin baseball between the two of us. We can sit here and talk about this for hours. But let me ask you about this, because this was a big story yesterday. I saw it on the AP wire, and then Craig Meyer wrote about it from a Pittsburgh point of view in the Post-Gazette. The amount of money that NCAA programs are going to miss out on and the impact that it's going to have on them going forward, and not so much, look, Pitt is in the ACC, and the amount of money they're going to miss out on, I don't want to say is a drop in the bucket, but relatively speaking to the distribution they'll get from the ACC, it's not going to crush them. Places like Duquesne and Robert Morris, this could have much more of an impact as the NCAA is going to distribute, I'd say about 35% to 40% of what they were originally going to distribute based on the fact that they're just not getting the revenue from the NCAA tournament. You cover all of these local schools, and you're intimately aware of the people involved in all of these programs. Is this the kind of thing that could lead to, and I know there's Title IX requirements and there's legalities involved, but do you get the sense this could lead to some programs just being disbanded for a few years, some of the smaller programs at even mid-major and small schools like Duquesne or Robert Morris, being able to limit what they can offer?
I think that's the greatest fear for the mid-major and smaller Division I programs, is that they would have to cut. And I think before we get to, you know, the catastrophic worst-case scenarios, you know, a lot of this all depends on whether the football season goes on. And that's why I think people are still holding out hope so much that that can continue, because that's the greatest revenue generator in the fall. The NCAA tournament is what really makes money for all of the universities. You know, that's where the biggest television contract comes in. But football could save everything. So you're going to see people really push for football to survive. But it may be at the expense of some of the other, you know, what they might call Olympic sports programs. And, you know, we've seen it in years past where Duquesne University put an emphasis on football and basketball and cut programs like wrestling and baseball. And with Title IX requirements, that's going to, you can't just cut the women's sports, or you can't just cut the non-revenue generating sports. You're going to have to cut across the board. And so I think it could have an impact on every athletic program and every athletic administrator and coach. You know, there could be reductions that they could have. You know, I think it could be catastrophic more so for the Division II and Division III programs, which we really have a greater concentration on. Concentration of in Western Pennsylvania. You think about all the small schools that are out there that play, you know, either in the PSAC or the PAC, and that's where it could really be devastating, is that money is not going to be distributed. I think it went from, you know, 600 million to, what is it, 250 million is the payout. So you're talking about belt tightening from everywhere, you know, at every level. And that could be absolutely devastating. It could be something that they could just say, hey, you know, we're going to make this a one-year thing, and we're going to have to, you know, really watch our budget. But it could be absolutely crushing to some schools that rely, you know, almost completely on the television revenue from the NCAA basketball tournament. And it's not just the NCAA tournament, but also the conference tournaments.
Right, and you brought up a good point. There's still fear of the worst case scenario, which is no college football this fall, which it sounds like some people are becoming increasingly worried about. And then you're really talking about cutting into revenue across not just the mid-major and small programs, but now you're talking about cutting into revenues for those Power Five and Group of Five schools who that's it. The college footballs and college basketball, to a lesser extent, are how they make their money.
Yeah, I mean, and we're seeing the early ramifications right now are in terms of recruiting and not having people on campus, not having coaches on the road. But, you know, the restrictions could become a lot greater. And I think the other part of it is, you know, and this is the thing that I've followed on social media, whether it's, you know, Twitter or Instagram. There are a lot of athletes who are trying to train to stay in shape. And I think that this becomes a major liability issue for the NCAA. And I think that's what's going to dictate everything. Is how do you put athletes out there that haven't properly trained? If they're not together and they're not training under the instruction of their coaches, you don't know what kind of condition these athletes are in. And you also have the fear of liability if somebody were to get sick, you know, if they're out there performing. And I think that's what shut down all of the conference tournaments and eventually prompted the cancellation of the NCAA tournament, is just the liability issues of you know, having events go on in front of fans and having the athletes get sick. And I think that's where the NBA really started the complete shutdown, was when they had, you know, players who were diagnosed positive for the coronavirus, you know, like Rudy Gobert. When that became an issue of putting them on the court or putting everybody inside the building in jeopardy, that they had to shut it down. And so, you know, I was stunned to see, and here it was, you know, my job depended on sports, you know, for covering them, and I ultimately lost my job, but I was still, regardless of what happened to me, I was stunned to see that some of these tournaments and different sports continued to play, or at least planned to play, until the sports world was shut down on Thursday, March 12th. You know, you saw the Big East tournament had a game going on that stopped in mid-game. The Pirates had a game that continued through the end, even though the season, spring training games had been canceled midway through. You know, that to me was, I thought it was stunning that the risk was out there. And so I think that's the next thing, is I'm sure the NCAA has some insurance that they can recover from the losses of the NCAA tournament, that it's not going to be maybe as crippling as maybe feared. But I also think that there's got to be the concern of liability that's involved if somebody did contract the coronavirus while playing in a sport that continued to go on even afterward, even after all the warnings and even after the NBA shut its season down that the Wednesday the day before.
Yeah, and that, I'm sure that'll play a huge part in deciding when teams get back to work and when we get back to having games to watch again. Kev, thanks so much for getting up early with me this morning. I know you guys love to be on the air on the weekends, especially now when you don't have your column to put out there as well, just to get your opinions out there and your thoughts on things. So glad I could give you at least a couple of minutes. Stay safe, stay healthy. Same to your mom and Kieran, your entire family, everybody else, and I'll talk to you soon, all right?
Hey, Chris, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it, and all the same to you.
All right, man. Kevin Gorman with me here on 93.7 The Fan. I'm Chris Mack. It is not The Fan Morning Show, but I am with you until 9 a.m. this morning as, well, all our weekenders, they can't get into the building because the building's on a limited, absolutely need-to-work policy, so our producers are coming in, and that's pretty much it. Everybody else doing shows from home, and that includes me. I have the equipment here at home to do a show from home. A lot of our weekenders don't. All of our weekenders don't, in fact. So that equipment and technology has been dispersed amongst those of us who work Monday through Friday, and we've been called upon to work a little bit on the weekends as well, but I still want those weekenders who you're used to hearing from on the weekend to have a voice and get a couple minutes to talk to you and talk to me here on 93.7 The Fan this morning. So Doran Dickerson will join me in about a half hour or so, a little less than that, right after 8:20. Josh Taylor coming up next because this is usually his Sunday morning grind. And thanks to Gormy, Kevin Gorman, for joining me as well.